The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Welcome everyone, Goldie's Closet. This is it. Let me hide my fat roll hanging down here. Goldie's Closet, episode 48. Can you believe it? I say that every time. Last week we had Martin Motnick from Accept. This week we have a very, very dear friend. Everybody put your hands together. Hands. Be good. Mr. Brian Bloomer. This is where we insert the applause.
Excellent. It's just loud.
Now you, it is a large crowd, and you are very soft spoken, and I am not. Put that thing bum hole. Everybody, Brian has done. You've done everything with entertainment. We're going to reveal how I met Brian years ago, but tell us about your early days of VJing, because I looked it up today. Like how. You were a VJ. You were like, before VJ even was a VJ and being cool, you did the Brimstone
Chronicles.
Yeah. Get it up your mouth. You're a sound guy, for God's sakes.
Yeah, I know.
Brimstone Chronicles, like, how did somebody just call you up one day?
No.
We're going to watch y'all's video here in a little bit and talk about all kinds of crazy things. But first, Star Flyer 59, what can you tell us about them?
I was in my last semester of college at UCF in Orlando.
And you had some long hair.
Yeah.
Did chicks dig that? Because, like, that's like the kind of hair, like, you want to just come up and, like, touch.
Well,
hide in.
People wanted to braid it or cut it. As you know, I donated it.
Yes.
At one point.
To Locks of Love.
Yes, to Locks of Love. And so I was sitting there in my broadcast management class, and I overheard two ladies at the front of the class talking about a new network that was coming to the Central Florida
area.
Were
the chicks hot? Do you remember?
I honestly don't remember.
The only reason I paid attention in school at all was if the guys were hot teaching me. But go ahead.
No,
these two chicks were like talking about this thing coming to town.
And that they were looking to hire people. And the whole class, all I could think about was what they were talking about. So afterwards, I went up and said, hey, I overheard you talking about it. And they said, well, there's this new network coming that they've bought the old Nautilus Weight Machines building up north of Orlando. And they're turning it into a TV production studio. And it's going to be all music videos and whatever. So I skipped the rest of my classes that day, hopped in my car, drove up I-4. Now, this is way before GPS. All I knew was the name of the town. And I drove on I-4 until I found the town, got off, drove around the little town until I found the building, which was completely unmarked, but I figured by their description what it had to be. I pull in the parking lot, and I knock on the door. It's a giant
metal
door.
Hey, you don't know where
you're
at. No, you don't know where
you're going.
Nobody knows you're coming.
All I know, but the whole time I'm driving there, I'm going, okay, what am I going to call it? What kind of new angles am I going to do? Because, like, at the time, Headbangers Ball was big. And I thought, okay, it's a very cool show, but here's what I would do different.
Okay.
So the whole way there, I created the show in my head. Titles, everything. Knock on this gargantuan steel door, not knowing what's on the other side. And this very tall gentleman with big, big glasses pokes his head out the door and, like, looks around and then looks at me and says, can I help you? I said, yeah, my name is Brian Bloomer. I'm here. I've got an idea for a video show and I want to host it. And he was, like, so in shock. He's like, how did you know we were here? I said, I overheard it in class. He goes, oh, well, you drove all this way. You might as well come in. And so he shows me around the place. Barely anything is modernized because when Nautilus had left it, it was kind of 70s technology. And so anyway, he said, here's our plans, blah, blah, blah. We're not hiring exactly right now because we're not set. So then a few months later, I get a call. We're not ready to do a rock and roll show. We're going to do some pop shows, but we do need an audio person.
Okay.
Because he knew that I did audio also. He said, so would you be interested? And I immediately said yes. And then he said, in volunteering. So I'm like, But I was working at UPS. So I was playing in bands. So I said, well, I can supplement the income. So I would drive way up there for 3 months. And then they hired me. And then 8 months later, they said, okay, we're ready to do the show.
So really? They made good on their word?
Yeah, well, because I kept pushing it.
Of course you did.
And so I wound up producing it, creating all the content for it, setting up the interviews with people. I would play guitar in the show. Well, then they got bought by Gaylord Entertainment in Nashville, and they let go of everybody except the president of the company and the programmer, and they moved to Nashville. So I'm out of a job, and somebody, a friend of mine, Sarge, comes over, knocks on my door one day and says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I live here," you know, still in Orlando. "I live here." He goes, "No, what are you doing here?" I go, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Why are you still here?" I said, "I'm looking for a job." He goes, "Don't you want to live in Nashville?" I said, "Well, yeah, but I don't have a job." He goes, "Let me get this straight. You're looking for a job in Orlando so you can live in Nashville?" I go, I didn't think about that. He goes, "Why don't you go to Nashville and not have a job there and look for one?"
Okay.
That was a Thursday. On Saturday, I was in Nashville, sleeping on a friend's floor.
So you just upped and moved?
Yeah.
What about the Brimstone Chronicles, though?
Well, the company had been bought by Gaylord.
Okay.
And moved here.
Yes.
So my friend whose floor I was sleeping on was the programmer of the network.
Okay.
Who, once I got established here, said to them, "Hey, he's here."
Yep.
So they wound up building this immense set, even bigger than the one in Florida, and it was stored at Opryland, and we would shoot it at Fox 17, which, oddly enough, like the inner department workings of stuff, they found that it was cheaper for that company, the TV company's budget, to go and do it at Fox 17 than to pay their own sister company at Gaylord, because the sound stage at Gaylord was more expensive. So anyway, so I did that up until 99, I think.
So you had your dream job, but...
Yeah. So then they folded, and but it was the highest rated show on the network. While I was playing, one of the people I interviewed knew a person that worked, a good friend of mine that worked at Gibson Guitars, and she came to me and said, "I see you play guitar on the show. Why aren't you playing a Gibson?" I said, "I can't afford one." She said, "What if we give you one?"
Yes.
So I'm during the day.
The answer would be yes.
Yes. During the day, I'm working building guitars at Gibson, because that was the job I got when I got here. Building guitars. They tell me I can pick one out. I walk through the factory, and it's nothing but the raw guitars hanging up.
Wow.
They're in the shape of a guitar, but they're not painted, colored, nothing. And I see this beautiful finish on the wood on this guitar, unfinished, and I'm like, "That one." And I literally was able to take that one and walk it through to all the best people in the plant to do each step.
You still have that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Even my name is written in the pickup cavity under the lacquer.
How much would that have been retail?
Well, because all the extra stuff I put on it, easily $5,000.
Yeah.
You know, so.
What a story of hustle. Like, I love focusing and hitting, driving that home, because constantly I'm telling people, if you want something, a lot of times it's not there. You have to create your own niche. You have to figure something out. And I love speaking to all of you. Realm Network, this is all, you're going to find out how I know Brian. You guys are going to pop for that. This is what I love you guys to remember, and that is, if you're sitting there picking your ass on unhappy about something or frustrated because you're like, "Well, why can't I get this?" Or we all get down in the dumps, and I love talking about depression and figuring out ways to motivate everybody and encourage you, because everybody needs that. This is a great story firsthand of somebody, like, if you're not afraid to go sleep on somebody's floor and take a chance, then piss off. Then you don't want it badly enough. And I don't care what that is. If I know a lot of you guys are wrestling marks. I know you love it. I know you want to be, you know, in the business. Did you hear there was a word that he said? It was started with a V, and that's volunteer. Like, there's so many things that you can do to be close to the things and the drive that you love. You just have to get out there, and you have to open your ears, quit feeling sorry for yourself, and figure out ways that you can do that. Wrestling stuff, whether it's starting a side hustle, another business, something that might allow you to wean off of your 9-to-5 that you hate. There are so many lanes out there and such space everywhere that you can find your own niche. So I remember something that you told me about the Brimstone, because I suffer from this, these symptoms as well. Uh-huh. And that's because people see you on television rolling and they just automatically assume like you're just like really super rich.
Right. So the whole idea of fame and fortune, a lot of people look at, sorry, I'm sound guy.
What, you're sound guy. Put it up there. A lot of people look at what?
Well, they look at somebody on TV and they assume that you must be really well off just because you're on TV. But fame and fortune are completely independent of each other, because the little bit of fame, I guess you'd say, that I had, or being recognized out and about, even at that level, people saw me and expected that I would have all kinds of money to donate to a cause.
Yes.
They have a sick relative, which breaks your heart. And you're like, I wish if I had the money, I would help you.
Now, speaking of sick relatives, if you check out my Instagram or Twitter post, you're going to see a photo with MySpace on the bottom. So when you're asking me if that's a current picture, you really need to like pay more attention to detail. But that MySpace picture is on eBay. And I found that last night. And that's why I posted it, because somebody was selling it for their reason was a sick relative or something. There's always the sick relative angle. And a lot of people in the wrestling world use that. Like, Goldie, will you sign this? And I'm honored that you didn't want me to sign anything, but it's always for your sick relative. So you might want to, like, you know, refine that a little bit and come up with a new gimmick to get people to sign stuff.
Yeah.
But they do automatically assume that you have all of that stuff going. And then now with the Facebook, like, everybody's got a cause and something that you, and they hit you up. And like every day I get like 30 to 40 people hitting me up for like, will you donate to my cause? Well, sweet pea, even if I donated a dollar, which doesn't even give you that option usually, I'd have to just have a full-time job donating to people all day long with the amount of people that we know. That's really, that's one of the things about the Brimstone Chronicles that sticks out in my mind that you told me about, was just everybody just expects.
Oh, yeah. And I had this car that I bought off my dad for a dollar that it was a Pontiac, and it probably broke down more than it ran.
Oh, no.
But that's what I drove around, because I didn't want to buy a new vehicle and have that burden and everything. But when people would see you and they're like, that's your car? And they'd be disappointed. I'm like, well, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you're paying my bills, then you can say something about my car.
Somebody once asked me if my 98 Honda was my commuter car.
Yeah.
Like, what? No, it's my car.
But
you asshole.
And then it's, you know, the endless requests for passes and, you know, tickets and everything else, which, again, I would help anybody that I could. But the idea that just because somebody's recognized that they're wealthy. Yeah, and especially anymore, because there's so much, you know, 15 seconds of fame going
God.
On. And these poor people that want it don't realize the cost of fame without fortune. You can't afford bodyguards. You can't afford to separate yourself. There's always the creepers and weirdos out there.
What's the creepiest creeper? Because, man, I've had some creepers in my day, and I still do.
Like, I think for me, like, I think what was the women creepiest thing? Like, more, but
yeah, but what was the creepiest thing, like, that you were just like, whoa, I am really creeped right now?
Back when, you know, there was home phones, somehow somebody got my number.
Back when there was
phone
home.
Yeah. We're constantly getting calls of, hey, you know, like they know you.
Oh, sure.
But of course they
Best
know
friends.
Enough about you that initially you might think, oh, maybe I just don't remember this person because, you know, they could read something. Or
are they,
saw
calling you, or are they leaving you a message on
well,
your...
both. But okay. I mean, you know, before you'd pick up and, oh, I don't recognize that number or whatever. But they,
well, they
would
didn't
call
have caller ID back then.
Well, no, there was.
Was
but,
there?
But again, it was one of those things where it might just say, you know, Nashville or whatever.
Okay.
Where you just start to feel uncomfortable, where they're constantly asking for money or hanging out or whatever. You know, like they know you. And I was never, I'm never afraid of anybody, but... Oh. Just the idea.
I'm going to call you and ask if we can hang
hey,
out.
Hey, you're going to hang out. And hey, are you going to this concert? Can I come hang with you? You know, that kind of thing.
No, I don't.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm just glad I'm not a female in this online world, because it's just ridiculous. You know, people say, oh, yeah, you know, it's made people worse. No, it hasn't. It's just enabled the crazy.
I agree. My dad always says the world is going to hell in a handbasket and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's always been to hell in a handbasket.
We just have more coverage of it.
We just didn't know about it as much. There's always been evil and disgusting and heinous crimes being committed.
Yeah.
It's just now everybody has the power to tweet them.
Well, and like
nothing's
the thing
new.
With earthquakes or fires. If you didn't have this immediate and 24-hour news cycle, as horrendous as the fires are that those people started in Australia, here you wouldn't worry about it as much.
Yes.
Because you wouldn't feel bombarded. So instead of it being one piece of information that you're able to analyze and look at realistically, you're hit with it 10 different times or 20 different times in an hour from slightly different angles with, you know, just, you know, vivid color pictures, and it seems so terrible, which it is really bad. But I think it's information overload for people, because you can't really take something in and analyze it now like you could before, because you're constantly bombarded.
Yeah, and that's the point I do like to tell my dad, like, just quit. Because, I mean, the world is ending tomorrow, according to Tom the Conservative, and he doesn't want to bum me out, but, you know, he's not going to live that much longer, so he doesn't care. That's always a nice way to preface a nice father-daughter conversation is, you know, I'm not going to live that long.
Yeah.
So it's really not going to affect me. I'm like, thank you, Dad. Creepers, I'm trying to think. You know, I've had just as many female creepers as I've had dude creepers, and there's just been so many whack-aholics that are out there, just complete whack jobs. Or I seem to attract gay guys to date. I don't know if I'm, like, their beard or what's up. Like, it's so bad. And, like, once I call them out or say, you know, you're gay, I don't think this is going to go anywhere because you clearly like men and taking it up the poop chute. Like, you don't like me. Why are you dating me? And then they get mad and they freak out and throw oil balloons on your building. And then what's so awesome is, you dumb mother trucker, there are cameras everywhere. And you can wear the dumbest disguise that you possibly can. But, you know, any...
You can see how somebody walks.
Well, or you can see that they run like a girl and they underthrow hand. They underthrow what they're... Like, no straight man underthrows. I just got to say. And even my gay buddies have more chutzpah than you do. I don't know what this guy's problem is. But, yeah, he completely demolished my house.
Wow.
And then he hashtagged all over his wall. Like, very similar to how I hashtag. He went ahead and just... What did the detective say that came over to the house? Because obviously I'm friends with all the cops, you idiot. They just said, like, why would somebody show their ass like that? And I'm like, because they're delusionally, they're just... So, again, this started out as just a creeper, turned into a hot creeper that I thought that I could date. But, you know, anytime that you date someone and you find yourself, like, frequently asking them, are you sure you're not gay? And that's a red flag.
I guess so.
Dude,
yeah.
I was so bad. I'm just like, you're gay. And then I was like, no, maybe he's just really effeminate. No, he's really gay. Like, you like dudes and you're angry about it. And let's get angry at Goldie. And I just don't have time for this. And it took a long time with my friends, cleaned up the oil balloons. And it was just that's a lot of money to spend on pressure washing.
Wow.
And then I thought, you know what? What if, I mean, I was out of town. He's just completely seeped the wood. Like, what if somebody would have walked by and thrown a cigarette? And burn my building down. How cool is that? Sorry, your gayness is not that cool.
Wow.
God. Yeah. Like, he could have really destroyed me. I think he probably wanted to. But creepers, I did tell the story last time. Were you in the band then? No, you weren't in the band. Oh, we got to get to how I know Brian. It was Valdosta, Georgia, and that woman was backing up. I thought they were backing up, and they weren't. They were face first, grabbed me by the legs. Bit into my vagina, and no, that wasn't you, but we had to go to the hospital and get a tetanus shot, and I had to get stitches.
You were on stage?
I was on stage on a catwalk, and I did my bend down thing to try to sing something to somebody backing up to me, like Cousin It, but it wasn't. And then she moved her hair and grabbed my legs and bit me. Yeah, just weird stuff.
Yeah,
so we're gonna reveal VJ, I didn't realize, I looked at your LinkedIn, like, you are, like, the sound manager for the Pretz? Like, you're music director?
DJ, yeah, music director.
Whatever. That's a big deal, though. Like, you just do all this cool stuff. No. It is a big deal. You've been doing that for a few years.
Yeah. I was doing it for the Titans also.
So, I want to talk about, to all the wrestling people out there, how I met Brian Bloomer. So, years ago, some of you are going to remember, it was 2002, and... this new promotion fired up called NWA TNA. The first one was at the Municipal in Huntsville, and the second one was at the Asylum in Nashville, Tennessee, over at the old fairgrounds, still is the fairgrounds. And I just remember walking around. I didn't know what I was doing. I was a complete idiot back then. I still am, but at least I'm learning that I am an idiot and have a lot to learn. And here's this, like, hip, groovy, long-haired dude doing sound. He mentions that he plays guitar, and I was just like, hey, you want to be in a band? It was like that. That was so lame, but that's how it went down.
Yep.
And then I don't even know how we found the drummer. We won't say his name because we don't embarrass him, but how do we find the drummer, and then how did we find Booty? I mean, back then, was it word of mouth? Was it Craigslist?
Yeah,
what was it?
It was word of mouth. It might have been
Cindy?
Through Al John.
Maybe it was through Al John.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
Why could we find... Why back then in 2002 was it so much easier to find band members than it is on my struggling saga? It's been over 4 months. Just so different now. I'm telling you, Brian.
I mean, to some degree, maybe with the music industry changing.
Changing into what?
Well, that's the thing. There's not the money from the sales that there used to be. I mean, you see these artists have millions of downloads and they're getting thousands of dollars. I think also with the whole immediacy of YouTube and Instagram and everything else, everybody wants fame right now. They
yes.
play with the best band at the top and they all think they deserve it or
yes.
whatever.
Yes.
But they fail to remember there's only one number one. You know, there can only be somebody in first place.
Mm-hmm.
And it rotates constantly.
Yep.
The bands that were famous 10 years ago aren't famous today. Some of them can still fill arenas, but it's not because they're selling new albums. They're living on legacy for the most part. But I think that the idea of working to build something.
Oh, God. That's what I was just going
on.
On
one hand, the record companies destroyed it because they were constantly trying to separate singers out from bands.
Yes.
And then there was constantly bringing in co-writers. So the idea of a band writing together, even though it hasn't always been exclusively just bands, but bands used to get together to write. And there was something unique in that chemistry.
Oh, my God. I just did, before we started this podcast, another bass rant. And I post it in all of the music forums. The rants seem to get better than just, here's our ad. It's me just talking to people. And I just wonder what the F people in this town are doing. Does anybody want to build anything or be a part of anything? My God, they refer to things as a shift. It's like a table shift waitress, 10 to 2. Are you going to play the 10 to 2? Like, what's that?
Yeah, it's the thing is, it is a mentality, a groove that you get into. Like,
I don't like it.
I started mixing quite a bit downtown to fill in when I wasn't
absolutely
out working other stuff. So I met a lot of musicians who, in say 2014, were telling me, I'm so done with this, I'm so over. And to this day, they're still down there playing. Because it is a groove that's hard to get out of. Because if they're getting paid and that's their job, and they're all amazing musicians, they're down there playing. The moment they say no or stop
taking
they
lose
a
their
shift,
place.
They lose their place. And now they have no income.
Yep. Or you could be in a band that offers a guarantee with three booking agents who constantly tours and lots of great shows that we're turning down. Like, I think people are, like, they're happier being that miserable guy married to that ugly bitch that they can just complain about at the water cooler at work. Does anybody want to be a part of something great where it's good and there's no drama and you're taken care of? I mean,
well, I think in a lot of cases, it's just easy to go down and, you know, play a shift, which, again, they're all amazing, but not everybody is willing to do the extra work to learn something outside of just the norm. Like, even the way that people dress.
That's another thing I went off on. If you want to look like an ugly blob of can you just look like appropriate? Can you look like a rock star? Why am I paying $5 or $10 at the door to get in?
If you stepped out in the crowd and you got lost in the crowd,
yeah, well, nobody knows
who
you are.
What's the point?
Yeah, why pay your money?
Yeah, and even like people say, well, Metallica wore, you know, cut off shirts and jeans. Yeah, but nobody else was.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why they stood out when they were doing it. But even if you went to see a play, if you went to see Shakespeare, and everybody had the perfect accent, they had all their lines memorized, but they were wearing blue jeans and a t-shirt instead of the period appropriate clothing to make it look
like
they
were. Let's run out to the ring in flannel and like some sweatpants.
Right. You have to look the part because people listen with their eyes. And now if your band gimmick is to look like you just walked in off the street, then that's fine. Sell it and everybody do it. But the thing is, in today's world where people have about a 7-second attention span, you have to have something that looks like you're a band. The Beatles were very deliberate, whether they were wearing suits or if they were in their Sgt. Pepper outfits or whatever. You knew that they were a group, and it just had, it gave people something to grab onto, to relate to either like or dislike, but they knew what they were getting and they worked at it. It's kind of like, as you know, Prince. as spontaneous as his shows looked, everything was planned.
He wouldn't even let you go down. Yeah.
You practiced spontaneity.
Yeah, you couldn't
so
even go down
to
the breakfast bar at a hotel without being on your shit. Like, he would notoriously go off on people if you didn't, like, I'm going to get cereal at the hotel breakfast bar. Well, you better look like full hair and makeup and be in costume because people need to know that you're somebody.
Or you take somebody like a Gene Simmons, okay? He doesn't have to do anything. But everything he does excellent with Kiss. A guy that I worked with was on the crew when they were doing their 3D tour before, and they had, you know, two projectors to make it brighter and the whole thing. And so they were lining up the projectors to get the 3D image just right, you know, out to the crowd. And the guy on stage had a radio. And the guy who was adjusting the projectors up top goes, yeah, that's close enough. Well, just when he said that, Gene was walking up on stage, and Gene grabbed his radio, supposedly, and said, if it's not perfect, it's wrong. Right? Now, people still would have paid the money to see Kiss. They would have had a great time. The music would have been the same. But it's those little details, or what I call a million pounds of feathers, that add up. You know, a feather is nothing, but a million pounds of feathers is still a million pounds. You know, it's only your weakest link is your strongest point. So, yeah. You sit there and you look at a band, and if you have somebody who's not contributing, they say, well, you know, I'm not holding the band back. But if you're not part of the engine, you're in the trailer. You're part of the weight.
Yeah, we argue with that all the time.
Because if you're not bringing your own tech, if you're not bringing somebody else to carry your weight and paying them appropriately, then you're actually holding the band back. Or any project. I mean, you could be a sales and marketing team that you got one guy that just shows up and takes credit but doesn't actually want to contribute. You know, or people that don't really learn the songs. Or my part as a guitar player, as you know, I always strove to nail the tone and the effect.
Yes, and I didn't appreciate that.
Just so that it was, so it sounded like what people expected.
I'm going on record right now saying that I'm an asshole. This whole week, next week is going to be about assholes, and it's me. Calling myself out, but no, I had no idea because I'd never had a guitar player before that was my best buddy, and we toured around. Like, I didn't know, like, to don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you know the song. I sing it in my head every day. I rot in my own human prison thinking that I didn't appreciate stuff. Brian completely nailing tones, completely learning parts meticulously. Now I've worked years since we have not been in a band together with complete horse shit and slop, which is really hard, and I'm like, oh, I really appreciated that. He would meticulously care for gear. Now I have to care for my own gear and drive my own trailer and my own truck and vehicle. And it's really hard. And you don't really realize all of that. But, man, you were spot on everything.
Well,
everything.
Me, why would you do it anyway?
Because that's what everybody does. And we had talked about Brian was in an accident. And we're gonna run over that one. No pun intended. But I said I had a good segue. And that was we've got some people that have been subbing for us, and they're great. And they always ask, well, how did that audition go? And how did this audition go? And I always say it was good, but it wasn't a good fit. We've already waited 4 months. I don't want to just push somebody in there that's not going to be right, like my gay lovers that I always have. I don't need that, and I don't need any more of that. And, you know, we really comb through people's walls, and it's like if you have swastikas on your wall or you hate certain groups of people or you're always drunk and trashed, then it's not going to be a good fit. And like this person argued, well, can't they just learn the music? And I said, if you're not equally yoked on pretty much 90% of the table, it's just not, it's not going to work in a friendship. I got news for you, at least in my experience, in my past, it has not. It's not going to work in a working environment. Because we don't punch out at 5, 6 o'clock p.m. We work all night long, load out, and then want to kill each other. And I can think of many times on the road, me and you wanted to freaking kill each other. And rightly so. You get annoyed with people. You're breathing them. You better pick somebody that at least out of the gate has some things that you have in common. And I was talking to Rod Saylor, our drummer, before this, and I just said, because somebody else made a really shit-ass comment, some snide remark about, I told you a long time ago not to count on musicians. And I'm like, bro, you're wrong. That's you. He told me, you told me, and he's a good friend of mine. I'd call him on it. You said if a band is not going in 2 months that you're out. He gives a band 2 months. And it is notoriously, I've watched his career over the last 20 years of knowing this guy. If they're not rolling in 2 months, shit, you don't even, you got to be It takes 2 years to get tight on stage and breathe each other and know what's going on. 2 months is not enough time. And I argued with him, you know what? I said, the people that have been equally yoked with me have been around for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Like, other people may have gone, but if I, like Brian and I, we don't drink. Brian doesn't curse. I do. So, you know, he's probably like annoyed with that. But like, he's always on time. He does what he says he's going to do. Completely punctual. I'm not. I learned from him. But for the most part, if he says he's going to do something, I don't need to worry that it's not going to happen. You know what? I don't want people in my life that make me wonder. There's nothing. Some guy was in here the other day auditioning saying he wonders if the kids that he's hiring these days are going to show up for a gig. Dude, you'd be so gone. So gone with me. I don't want to wonder about shit. It's already a wonder if we're going to get there and not get a flat tire. It's a wonder if anybody's going to show up at the door and make the guarantee so I can pay all of you. It's a wonder if that happens, if I've got enough from the door to pay for hotels that night. I don't want to be wondering if you're coming.
Right.
And it's just that mentality, that old school mentality, like, what happened to it? And you hit it when you said people just think like they're going to be on Instagram and be the next best thing and they're going to make all this money. And it's like, bullshit. You got to work that stuff. Where's the hustle?
Well, and also just relying on people. And I think that there's been something lost on a lot of people, that your name is on everything that you do. So if you're going to engage in anything, no matter how small or insignificant you think it is, do it the best you can, because it's you. And you never know who's watching what you're doing. You know, for instance, musicians that are playing on stage, or somebody running sound, or at any job. You know, there might be some millionaire that walks into a random business that sees this hard worker who clearly is not being paid enough for what they do, is somebody else is being paid the same amount as them to sit in the corner. And that guy might pick up on that and go, hey, why don't you give me a call? I mean, I've seen that happen. For me, the whole way I got started with like Marty Stewart, when I worked with him, I went downtown, stopped by and visit a friend who was working at a bar just to see what was going on musically with them. And she says to me, she says, hey, our sound guy didn't show up tonight. Can you do sound for us? I'm like, yeah, sure. I didn't even ask for money. I was already there, whatever. I knew of the bass player, that he was, famous in the studio world in Nashville. So these guys get up and play. They're freaking amazing. I'm like, wow. So afterwards, the guitar player comes up to me. He goes, do you do sound full time? I said, well, I'm in audio full time. I do post and I do, you know, TV and whatever pays. He goes, do you want to go on the road with Marty Stewart? I said, sure. When? He goes, this weekend. So this is the guitar player, Kenny, that still plays for Marty to this day, that he liked what I did. So I wind up teching for Marty Stewart for a while and doing monitors and handling some of the most expensive guitars in existence that Marty has, from Johnny Cash and Clarence White of the Byrds. And just famous guitars that are unbelievable, legendary. And I'm sitting there changing strings and working on them. That all came from doing my job well. I could have phoned it in and just pushed faders up and gone back and sat and watched, but I mixed them the whole time.
I love,
you know,
that.
And I had no idea who they were. And it didn't matter to me if they were just somebody off the street or world famous musicians. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Because it's me.
But you do a great job at everything that you do. And that's what we were talking about. I think a lot of depression that happens these days is just because so many people are just kind of status quo. They're just sliding by. And
well, mediocrity is okay.
It's not. Obviously, it wasn't good enough for Gene Simmons.
Right.
You've done sound for everybody. You've played in amazing bands, not just one I know. You played in amazing bands. You have done, and I don't know if you're still doing it, the Alice Cooper tribute, and the name of that is?
The Alice Cooper tribute show.
Tribute
I
show.
Haven't done that in a while, because that goes back to what we talked about before. Commitment. And in Alice's case, to do an Alice Cooper tribute right, there's a lot of props, a lot of gimmicks, costumes, everything. The commitment it takes to do that. I mean, I've got a full-blown 12-foot working guillotine, right, waiting to be used again someday. But you can't just jam Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
You don't just get a chord chart.
Yes.
There are specific parts. It's orchestrated. They deliberately put parts. And it's not just one part. It's two guitar parts, sometimes more. And everyone has to play a part. You have to hit a mark. I need you standing here at this beat. Whatever. Well, that's too much for most people. And understandably so, because, you know, it's not going to pay anytime soon. You have to love it, but it leads to other things.
But there's so many people that do stupid stuff all day long that they
waste
love,
their
that
time
there's
and
no
money. Yeah.
money at all. And yeah. it's just like, that goes back to what I was saying. You asked me if we've had any, we've had two people that could play. One was amazing, and he
out
was
of
a
how
monster.
Many auditions?
78. Wow. We had two people that could play, and I loved this guy. He came over to the studio 5 times. He did say that he really wished that they would legalize heroin, cocaine, and meth, because he said that people that used wouldn't feel so badly about themselves. And at that point in time, I was thinking, I don't know if this is going to be a good fit, because, you know, we try to represent clean living as much as possible in our group, and I do, for God's sakes. And then, you know, he kept saying, what do we need to do to move forward? And I sent him the set list. I sent him the Dropbox of everything. I mean, I was like, we're ready to go. When do you want to have the first practice? When do you have 10 songs down? And then I just didn't hear from him. And he just blew me off. And then I saw some post on Facebook forum that it came down to this. He's going to have to get a regular job and, like, give up everything. I guess he got a DUI and smashed his car. And now he doesn't have transportation and nobody wants to pick him up. And I'm just like, sorry, like but he could really play. He was fantastic. And then the other kid, just, I think he has a rich girlfriend and doesn't need to do anything, so why bother doing anything?
Yeah,
but super good player. And then the rest of the people that have been trying out, they really can't play bass. I think they dabble in it, or maybe they've tried to play it a few times, but they're not really bass players, or they can only play bass on the songs that they've practiced. And to me, when you can say that you own your instrument, that is, like, I'm doing a Rush tribute benefit at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. I have never heard Rush. I've never listened to Rush. It's really out there. The time signatures change constantly.
The phrasing, everything.
Very
yeah.
difficult stuff to learn, and I'm really trying to nail it, and I will nail it. And I'll show up very confident, and Rich Redmond from Jason Aldean's group is going to be there with a bunch of other guys on the song that I have to sing with no rehearsal. They're going to do a run-through right before the show because they're all on tour. So I'd better have my stuff together. I listen to it every day. I've found vocals online of this stripped down, like the a cappella version or however they dephase it. I'm doing everything that I can to be the best that I can be. I'm not getting paid for it. It's a benefit for cancer, for Neil Peart, for the American Cancer Society. And it's like, don't take the job if you don't want to put the effort into it.
Right. And a lot of musicians forget that nobody paid them to learn the instrument initially. When they were sitting in their room or whatever, taking lessons initially, they weren't expecting to be paid. But then at some point, yes, you might be worth something, but you have to sometimes go out and show that.
Absolutely.
You know? And a lot of times, again, you have to do some giveaways. It's kind of like, to me, it's advertising. Sometimes you have to pay for a business card to pass it out, right?
Yeah.
So you've already put in all that time practicing. Sometimes you need to go play for free or way less money to show that you can do it.
Yeah, and sometimes, and you gotta know your value too. There's a balance on all of that.
If you're trapped into, this is my job and I have to get $200 to do this show, well, that's fine. And you're absolutely welcome to that. I'm sure you're very qualified as a player. But if you're trapped in that rut, maybe you might want to think about getting another source of income to allow you to do that more freely. Because if you're trapped into playing where now you're bitter and you resent music, well, then maybe you're not where you should be.
That's any job. That's not even playing. And the reason that I brought up the benefit was I consider and I call myself a professional vocalist and also entertainer. So I don't go auditioning for other things because we have our own group. But if I did, I would consider myself that, and I would show up and know the stuff, where a lot of these bass players, they don't, they really, they can't play anything. And there was another point about, if you're trapped in that, we had somebody that was in the group that, did it snap? No, it shouldn't have. We had somebody in the group that wouldn't do anything to supplement income unless it was music related. Like, they just wouldn't do. I'm like, okay, well, I clean houses sometimes. I organize people's houses sometimes because I love it. And I can put my headphones on and make $25 an hour and I don't think twice and I leave. I do graphic design. I have a photography business. I'm an influencer. I do health and wellness gimmick stuff, side hustle, everything. I'll do whatever it takes so that I can do the band, because I lose money a lot of times on the band. But you know what? None of you guys would know me if it wasn't for the band, because it was the lawyer of the band that got me into NWA TNA. That's how I got into it, the new promotion. And unless I was in a band touring around, nobody would have ever found me. So there's chicken and the egg there. but you have to start someplace. Yeah, you have to start someplace.
And unfortunately, most people are only exposed to people.
Instagram.
Instagram. When they recognize somebody or somebody's considered famous, they don't see all the work that went into it.
And why do you want to be famous?
And all of the failed auditions for actors and musicians. You know, or I don't remember the exact number, but I've always heard that the Beatles went to, and I could be wrong on the number, 45 labels, and the 46th one signed them or whatever it was.
Same thing, KFC, 900 and some places refused the original recipe. And the last one, 1,001, it was the 1,001th attempt for the light bulb.
Right. Yeah, he learned 1,000 ways not to do it.
Yeah,
exactly. Or how many songs did people pitch to people and they didn't get picked up and they think the song's gone and then suddenly, randomly, somehow, a bigger artist gets them.
Or we're singing about it with Cheese and Velveeta with I'll Stop the World and Melt With You. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Things get picked up in weird ways or they get put on, you know.
Which goes back to doing your best, whatever you're doing, because you don't know where that's going to go or where it's going to end up or who's going to see it. And phoning it in all this time with music or whatever job, it doesn't do anybody any favors. And the idea that mediocrity has become acceptable is not good for anybody. And making excuses for mediocrity is not good for anybody. People wonder why the quality of service at restaurants has gone down or the quality of things that are built or whatever. It's because we've accepted it, you know? In stark contrast, I sit there, I go to Chick-fil-A, and I'm like, how come everybody can't be this nice? Even if they're faking it, they're required. You need to smile and greet people and don't badger them, you know, and whatever. But you go to other restaurants and they're sitting there on their phone taking your order. They're looking at their cell phone.
Yes, or they're eating a jelly donut.
Bothered, or they're
in line at Kroger.
You ask them to not put something on your order. I'm not asking you to add something and do more work. I'm asking you to not do something. That means it takes no effort. And you still get it wrong.
Yeah.
If you can't not do something and get it right, why am I going to pay you more than minimum wage anyway?
Because it's a patty and two things of bread, and could you put a straw in the bag? But no.
No,
we
can't.
Brian Bloomer, we're going to wrap up with a story that he has when he walked in the door about an accident that he was in. But before we do that, I want to make sure that if you do love, you know, just plain old raw rock, follow Brian. Where can everybody find you on? Because you got a really interesting Instagram.
Yeah, Brian Lionman.
Brian Lionman.
Yeah, which
guitarist, sound man, sound tech, music. What's the word I'm looking for? Not program.
Director.
DJ, music director. Like, just what an interesting life that you have. I love seeing all of your posts. Like, you really, you do live the dream. You have a great.
I mean, I've done everything from, I did the first brain surgery on the internet. I did audio for that. I've worked in the White House with the second President Bush doing audio. You know, worked with Marty Stewart, worked with Billy Gibbons, worked with Alice Cooper, all these people. And it was never some diabolical plan. It was just pursuing what I love and being willing to do whatever it takes.
That's the theme here, willing to do whatever it takes. You mentioned that you got into a car wreck, that a drunk driver hit you. You were at the doctor. What happened?
Well, it's actually the second time I've been hit by a drunk driver. I'll live. And I was just sitting at a stoplight on the way to do the music at the Predators.
The old sitting at the stoplight.
Yep. And this guy just decided. Here's the thing. He hit me. Okay. I was not looking in my rearview mirror. I was fully stopped, waiting for the light to change. I get hit. So in that instant, I get hit. I look in the rearview mirror. He then pops his head up and kind of looks around. Like,
he woke up.
Am.
God love him.
Yeah.
Time to wake up and come to the party.
Yeah.
It's called driving.
It was, his vehicle was already smashed in the front. His bumper was duct taped on. He had an altered temporary tag that wasn't even to that vehicle.
Sure.
No license, no insurance.
No.
The other drunk driver that hit me back in 2006, she was coming from a bar, had been drinking all day, and said in the deposition that they asked her, why were you driving so fast down a side street? And her excuse was, when she T-boned me, she said that, well, I figured if I drove fast enough. Now, this is the sober version of her. I figured if I drove fast enough, I could get home before the cops caught me.
that's
drunk logic.
Thank you. That's great.
But, you know, she sent me to the hospital with a concussion. I cracked the driver's side window with my head. And I was bleeding from the airbags, the whole thing. And both of these people, the guy recently, it was 4:30 in the afternoon, but both these people were so close to their home. There was no excuse. And especially for the guy recently, there's Uber. He had a cell phone.
Yeah. You know, that's so bad news.
And maybe I took the hit so that they didn't kill somebody else. But it's such a simple little thing, especially now. If you're inebriated, under the influence of anything, you're not the only one that's at risk. You're probably going to kill somebody else and not yourself.
Yeah, and once you do, boy, the it's getting harder and harder with the manslaughter laws. And I got to tell you, I've just really made a conscious effort to put my phone in my purse and just not. I used to put it in the back, but then I'm like, what if I needed it for emergencies? So I do put it in a purse pocket so that it's not just sitting next to me. So at a stoplight, that I can look through my stuff. And because you should really, even at a stoplight, be paying attention in case there's an accident and you can see what's going on or get out of the way or react. And it's just like the car is just no place for a phone. Yeah. Or for somebody to be.
It's a weapon.
You know, it is.
It's a missile. And you get these people, you know, especially you get experience over time driving. It doesn't make you, you know, flawless or whatever, but you know how to handle situations. You know how to spot potential problems. But you get a lot of people who are just in their first, you know, 3, 5, 10 years of driving. Maybe they're in a new type of weather situation or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then you add that phone in.
Yeah.
Not only do they have one less hand, but they're not paying attention to the road.
I'm terrified.
And the terrible thing is, you look at the number of kids, teenagers in particular, in high school who die.
Yeah.
Completely related to the cell phone.
Yeah, I'm not.
That's unbelievable.
I'm not into it anymore. C.K. Lewis was talking about just this desire, this need for, he said, like, in a society, like, we can't have any quiet time or any downtime. He said there's so much loneliness that, you know, he would be driving along and pick up his phone and just be like, like, literally feel like there was something wrong with him because nobody had texted him or nobody had communicated or reached out or nobody liked anything. And it's just, it's a very odd climate these days. But I'm sorry that you got in that accident. And I don't have any tolerance for drunk drivers at all. And if that's you, get your shit together. But I got to point the finger at myself and say I am just as bad as a drunk driver when I'm on my phone. So I'm making, like I said, a conscious effort to just not have it in there. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be respectful of everyone's time today. We've definitely talked to Brian. And if there's anything that I wanted you to get from our guest is just the opportunities that are out there for you and to become excited about it and know that if you just put your mind to something, as trite and cliche as that sounds, that you really can make a dent out there in your dream or in happiness or maybe not just being so down all the time. So many of you write in just that you need a little bit of a little extra oomph, a little something, something. Learn from Brian's story, whether it's sleeping on a friend's floor or driving all night or all day to get to a new opportunity, that they're out there, but you do have to hustle for them.
Thank you.
Oh, that's it? That's the closing thought.
Well, another thing, talking about going after what you want, the biggest fear that holds people back is failure. And I think the thing that has helped me is I'm not afraid to say yes to opportunities. Now, I wouldn't want somebody to say yes to going and doing open heart surgery if they've never done it before. But if you have the base ability and desire to do something, I had never hosted a video show before. You know, every famous person out there, every successful person, every doctor had their first surgery. You know, every singer had their first song. But they had to say yes to it. They had to set their mind to do something. And I think the biggest issue with people is don't be afraid. If you pursue what you love, you've heard the saying, if you do what you love, you never work another day in your life. But if you pursue what you love and look at opportunities, seek them out and recognize them when they present themselves, most people would be a lot better off. But most people live in fear of failure. And, you know, I've heard the old story that Babe Ruth, when he was the home run king, he was also the strikeout king, because the only way he was able to hit that many balls was to go to bat way more times than he actually hit. And, you know, growing up, my dad always seemed to have it together. He knew his job. He was excellent at it. He had men under him in the military. And, you know, he commanded respect and he was organized. And I thought, one day I'm going to grow up into the adult world and it's going to be like that everywhere. But then I discovered it's not. There's always the jerk. There's the person that picks on people, that makes fun of people, that belittles people. You know, there's the whiny, complaining, malcontent in every line of work. And you have to rise above that. You know, you have to be better than them because we're all individuals. And even though sometimes you're in a group mentality or whatever, you still have to be the best you. Mm-hmm. And that'll stick out whether you've got an office job, a band, you know, whatever you're doing. You're the one that's going to get promoted or rewarded. And I really want to encourage people, just say yes to opportunities. You know, I've heard fake it till you make it. And it doesn't mean do it in a mediocre way. But if you have the base ability to do something, say yes to the opportunity, learn it, figure it out, and do it, and become the best. Why would you? The reason I know everything about sound, I used to say I wanted to know how it works from the pick to the PA. If something breaks down, and my pick hits the string and I'm not hearing something coming out of the PA, there's a million places in between it could fail. And most guitar players or a lot of musicians, they look at their cord and their cord's plugged in and that's the end of it. Well, I don't know. This works. Well, it wasn't okay with me. I wanted to know, how does everything work? How does it get to the listener's ear out in the audience from my guitar pick? And it was never some, you know, big plan to learn all of that. To me, it was a necessity. It's my art. It's my craft. Why would I not want to know how to do it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would just encourage people, say yes to opportunities, seek them out, and be aware of the opportunities that are there in front of you right now.
Words to live by. Once again, our guest today, Mr. Brian Lyon, Man Bloomer. And special thanks to, if you've made it this far in the podcast, God bless you. We love you. Thank you so much for patronizing every week. Thanks for being a member of the brand. You know, it's a great family. And to Papa, Grandpa Vince for having me under his umbrella. And thanks to Mark at the Realm Network. And of course, Jeff Lane, thank you for everything that you do, uploading all this stuff and helping us with all the technical end of everything. Have a great week, everyone. Take care. Thanks, everybody, for watching Goldie's Closet, episode 48, The Realm Network, with, again, my guest, Mr. Brian Lyon, Man Brian Bloomer. Hey, everybody, it's your girl, Goldilocks, and you're inside Goldie's Closet. And I want to ask a favor of you all, whether you watch the show or not, if you come to our band shows, what have you, it's something that you can do to support, and it costs nothing and no time at all. If you shop on a very popular online website, I would really appreciate it if you would bookmark some of the items that you are shopping for. And if you could just simply do this, go to goldienose.blogspot.com. If you go over to the right, all the way to the bottom, the About Me section, there's a link. It just says I'm an Amazon affiliate. If you click on that, it takes you inside my umbrella, and everything that you order, I can earn just some help and support to keep all of this going, to keep the band going. We've got a hefty vehicle repair. It's pretty substantial. So it would be really great if you could remember my link. We get some support. It's that simple. I love you all. Thank you for making the time to stop by and check out everything that we're doing. Mwah.